Agudah Shia, Tuf Shin Ayin Ches.
You didn't put down the temperature either.
Voice then. Okay. Yeah, give them up. Are we all referred to the night as the Seder night, Leil Seder? The phrase of calling it Seder night is found in the Tosfos and Zvachim, and it's also found in the Siddur of Amram. Why do we call it the night of the Seder? Why is it called Leil Seder? When did that Leil Sibur Tis Mitzrayim? You have to give it a title. Leil Shimurim, right? So how did we pick up this idea of Seder? So one suggestion that Rabbi Druk has in his new Haggadah is that the night of Seder really was the, in its first iteration, was the opposite. It was Pesach. Pesach means Kadosh Baruch Hu was hopping from place to place. It looks almost random. So I think there's a limit to that point. If we were in Mitzrayim at that time, so we would be imagining, we see people, there are people dying as far as the Mitzrayim are concerned. So ain't shon beis, it seems to be people dying. Simply they're not dying, it looks random. We knew it was very organized. We, Klal Yisrael, knew it wasn't random at all. It was the house where there was a Bechor. It was the house where they put those are the ones who died. And the houses that had that kept the first mitzvah, so they were saved. So what looked to the outside eye as a random act of occurrence of death, for us, it was extremely orchestrated. It was very well organized. We could tell which home. So for us, it was Musudar. There is the Rambam writes in his, that his, he began his Haggadah, we begin with Holach Ma'anya. He begins, B'behilu Yotzonu Mi Mitzrayim. Holach Ma'anya, first phrase, B'behilu, we ran out of Mitzrayim, we left Mitzrayim, B'behola, with a shock, we left Mitzrayim not clear as to what was happening. And I believe that probably the best explanation of why we call it El Seder is because even though the Rambam writes Haggadah B'behilu, but the Rambam, when he discusses the Seder night, he says Sidur Asiyas Mitzvos Bilel Chamish Oser. There are many mitzvahs that are happening. And the Rambam says, what is that? All these mitzvahs are organized. There's a very set way in which we do the mitzvahs. So we think about Leil Seder, it is probably the most orchestrated series of mitzvahs. Right? There's a tremendous, it's very organized. For example, we have the Simane Seder. We have the 13 markers. There's no any other situation where we have markers. It's true, in Davening we have Kaddish is a marker sometimes. Baruch, we don't have 13 markers for the entire night of a series of mitzvahs. We're organizing the mitzvahs. So I once suggested that is the what's really behind the payet at the end of the night when we say Echad miyodeya, Shnayim miyodeya. It's a strange thing to have at the end. And we stop at 13. 13 is the Midas HaRachamim. 14 are the Simanei Seder. And there are 14, except for according to most we've shown him, there are 14 Simanei Seder. So I think that what the Pait was doing is he was thinking Adon Olam, let's start over again. That was what's going in people's minds. It was a Pait. They were saying, we accomplished the 14. So one way of expressing they accomplished 14, they said, what's 1, what's 2, what's 3, what's 14 is obvious. Tonight was 14. Tonight was the 14 Simanei Seder. And you think about the night, everything is orchestrated. The story has to be told, has to begin with genus, with bad news, has to end with shvach. It has to be organized around the four kosos. Every kos has a certain job. And and it has to be organized by she'el and shuva, questions and answers. So the night is an extremely tightly orchestrated night. And that's what the Rambam writes. Sidur Asiyas Mitzvos Elu. We have many mitzvahs to do that night. And we have see Yitzhiyas Mitzrayim is obvious. And then we have Zechiris Yitzhiyas Mitzrayim and Merkayim. And then we have obviously the Matzah and Morah. We have the Drabbanans. We have Korach. I think according to Gra, I think there are almost the scores of mitzvahs we do on Leil Seder. We think of five or six. But there are many, many more mitzvahs that we do, even unwittingly. And Talmud Torah, Kibbutz Avim, in terms of what we ask Shilas, numerous mitzvahs. There are Raisa, there are Bonan. So we have to have an organization for them. So Leil Seder is the night when we're organizing the mitzvahs that we have to do that night. And that is in contradistinction to two ideas. One is the Rambam Seder began Bibihilu Yotzalmi Mitzrayim. We left Mitzrayim with a behola. We left Mitzrayim not having nothing packed, nothing ready, didn't know what was happening to us. So we mark that it's true that we left Mitzrayim with a behola, but then we're able to appreciate it, understand it, put everything into its place, and organize the events that took place, and understand the Yad Hashem. But I think there's even a deeper idea, and that is that one of the jobs of an Eved is to have a well-orchestrated life. The Eved doesn't have the ability to decide what he wants on any given day. The Eved's life is defined by Seder. If an Eved decides to be a little bit more exciting, more creative, he may get fired the next day. He has a job to do, and he has to make sure certain things happen. I often quote my father's Ha'ara that the reason why we focus on questions Leil Seder is because an Eved doesn't ask questions. Eved has too many questions. He's not a good Eved. So the same thing is true about Seder, that an Eved is supposed to carry out instructions, do and do it in an organized fashion. So one of the ideas of Leil Yitzhiyas Mitzrayim is how we use the tools and the skills that we learned as an Eved to be an Eved Hashem. One of the goals of Leil Seder, one of the goals of Yitzhiyas Mitzrayim, Ilu Lo Tzion HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have taken us out, we will still be Avodah Tefara. So I don't know if we would be precisely in Mitzrayim, but we would have the mindset of an Eved. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Baruch Hu's Torah gave us the ability to be an Eved, not to parve an Eved to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But many of the qualities of an Eved are appropriate for an Eved of Hashem. That we should be more creative, it's true, than an Eved to a human being. But an Eved human being is supposed to be dedicated. He defines his success that I serve my master appropriately. That's the definition of success. Same thing is true for an Eved to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That I carry out the Ritzono Borei. That's the definition of a person who is successful in service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the idea of taking a Seder and saying, now we will use this skill of orchestrating, of organizing, and use it to organize mitzvahs, organize the Avodas Hashem, that catches one of the important aspects of the evening. To take the skills of an Eved and to understand how being an Eved to a Paro enhanced to be an Eved to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's part of the Kura Barzel. Kura Barzel is to tweak out, to filter out some of the qualities of Klal Yisrael that they were not proud of. Mitchila Oiv the Eved Oiv Yisaino. But the Kura Barzel also is to refine. We're going to be Avodin to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So first, let's figure out what it means to be an Eved. And ultimately, the most important quality of an Eved is that my successes, that I carry out the insight of my master. So that's what I would suggest is one of the important ideas hidden in the Seder, the Seder. It's Seder Asiyas Mitzvahs. I think the Kolboy spelled it out, that the language of Seder comes from Seder Asiyas Mitzvahs. The way that we orchestrate the mitzvahs, the way that we organize, it's a very tightly orchestrated evening, and that is one of the skills of an Eved that we transfer to Ribbono Shel Olam. Sfas Emes is a different approach. Sfas Emes' approach to Seder is that on Leil Yitzhiyas Mitzrayim, the world went back to its appropriate organization. Because Baruch Hu organized the world, that Klal Yisrael is Rashis Goyim, Rashis Rol Himishraim Varitz, for the Rashis Klal Yisrael. And the Tzrayim is a descendant of Canaan, Canaan Eved Lomoy. So the organization of the world is supposed to be that Klal Yisrael is a leadership position, and Klal Yisrael is a well sought after position. And the Mitzrayim is supposed to be a service oriented nation. So with Golos, the world is not the way it's supposed to be organized. It's part of many Golos. So part of the Golos Mitzrayim was that the world was strange. It wasn't organized the way it's supposed to be. And the Yitzias Mitzrayim organized the world the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be that Klal Yisrael is a representative of Ribono Shel Olam, that we are, our activities are Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. It's supposed to be that Mitzrayim is in a service-oriented position. So the night of Yitzias Mitzrayim is a night when the world went back to the original Seder that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had conceived of for the world. And that's that gives meaning to when we say that Yochel Mei Rosh Chodesh. Maybe we should have started discussing Yitzias Mitzrayim Rosh Chodesh. So I get pointed out in previous years that Yochel Mei Rosh Chodesh takes on deep meaning because the Ramban says that redemption is complete when we have Shechina. The last parish of Shemos was when the Shechina came down to Klal Yisrael. That was Rosh Nisan, that was Shemini. So that is when the redemption is complete. That's what Ramban writes at the beginning of Shemos. Read Sefer Shemos and Sefer Geula. When is Geula complete? When Kadosh Baruch Hu comes down. When Yerchozel LaMalas Aviseinu. So Rosh Chodesh Nisan is a very, very good candidate. Such a good candidate that one wonders why Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't take it choose the Leil Seder to be Rosh Chodesh Nisan. But this gives also a deeper meaning as well, that according to Rabbi Yeshua, Rosh Chodesh Nisan is when the world was created. Nisan was when HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to put the world back in the way, give it the Seder it's supposed to have, with Klal Yisrael being a sought-after people, with the nations of the world respecting Klal Yisrael. So that's the connection between making sure that the celebration of Yitzias Mitzrayim takes place during the month of Nisan, and why Rosh Chodesh Nisan could be a very good night to celebrate, either because of Ashrei Shechina or because the return of the purpose of the Bria. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, "Matzo mor munachum lefanecha," that more important than seeing there are very many important aspects to Geula. One of the most important aspects to redemption is that we do a Kadosh Baruch Hu's will, that we keep his mitzvahs. So more important than highlighting Hashrei Shechina, more important than highlighting the world back to its original purpose, is Matzu Umor Munachum L'Fanecha, that we keep a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs, and that the night is focused on orchestrating those mitzvahs, and that the night is focused on how to do a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs. We do a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs with preparation, to Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs by thinking about them, to Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs by talking about them, the ideal way to do a mitzvah. All the other mitzvahs we have don't have that degree of orchestration. Tefillin, we put them on. If you have time, so you say some of the parashas, you think about what's going on in the tefillin. You say the parasha before some of the things in the tefillin. Tefillin, the tzitzis. We have to work on ourselves to do mitzvahs with hizboininus. Leil Seder, every mitzvah is done with hizboininus. Before we have the matzah, we've said matzah, shonu oichel moshel morer. Before we do any mitzvahs, we thought about it. So when we say it's Leil Seder, the Seder asiyas mitzvahs, so then it's also an important teaching for the rest of the year. This is an ideal way to do mitzvahs, to do it with simcha, to do it with his thinking. So that's what I would suggest. Why is it called Leil Seder? So one suggestion is that the night was initially a night of Beholah, and we saw the Seder that was going on in the night. We saw exactly what the Kadosh Baruch Hu said was being carried out. Another possibility is Seder Asiyas Mitzvahs. It's the organization of the mitzvahs. Why is that so important? Because that teaches how to do mitzvahs the rest of the year, and because that is the successful adapting of qualities of an Eved that are important for the service of the Ribono Shel Olam, and the Sfasemis approach, that the Seder that God imagined for the world came back to be orchestrated in the way that Kadosh Baruch Hu initially indicated, and the Golus of Mitzrayim had to be fixed up that way.
This past Shabbos, we had a chance, as Shabbos was ebbing away, to look at two different very brief tellings of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Chumash. One that's familiar from Leil HaSeder, and one that's familiar from all year long. Leil HaSeder, we focused on those couple of psukim that appear in the end of the beginning of Parshas Kisavo, Arami Ovidav, Yerid Mitzrayma. That brief telling of the Jews going into Mitzrayim, coming out of Mitzrayim, and ultimately coming to Eretz Yisrael, that those psukim appear beginning of Parshas Kisavo. We associate them with Leil HaSeder. We associate them with Pesach. Once upon a time, Jews in Eretz Yisrael associated those psukim with the summertime. Those were summer psukim because those are the psukim that a farmer would recite when he approached the Mizbeach and Beis HaMikdash with his basket of Shivas Haminim, his basket of Bikurim, and he would remind himself, proclaim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I owe you everything. I owe you my life, I owe you, we owe you our nationhood, we owe you our connection to Eretz Yisrael, and I owe you the fact that I've been a successful farmer, that I've produced, and although I worked hard for months to make this, I recognize Hishtadlus is mine, but results are entirely in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the text we use, Leil HaSeder, is a text that has its roots in a very public expression of Hakaras HaTov, a very public expression of our dependence upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Another very brief telling of Yetzias Mitzrayim is, and perhaps in a sense the most famous one, is the beginning of Aseres Adibros. If you had a chance to focus about a couple of lengths ago, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces himself to Klal Yisrael at the beginning of giving of mitzvahs as Hashem Tzitzichem Eretz Mitzrayim and Beis Avadim. So there you also have the in multiple layers of took us out of Mitzrayim, took us out of Beis Avadim, and there we have the telling of Yetzias Mitzrayim, not in the context of Hakaras HaTov, but in the context of Ikari Amunah, the context of recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's reality, recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involved in our lives, and how that then lead, that's the appropriate preface to a lifestyle of mitzvahs. Once we recognize, we believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, then we can talk about Kabbalah, Solomach, HaShemayim, we can talk about all of the expectations, the do's and don'ts that then follow throughout the rest of the Aseres HaDibros and beyond. And what something, one of the ideas that this gets us thinking about is that Yetzias Mitzrayim is supposed to get us somewhere. Yetzias Mitzrayim can get us to a place of gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yetzias Mitzrayim can get us to a place of emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yetzias Mitzrayim can get us to a place of recognizing that we have responsibilities, that if He's our Creator, it's logical that He has the right to make calls upon our time and our energy and our person. Kabbalah Salmach HaShemayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim, telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, is supposed to get us to some goal or another, or probably many goals. There are a lot of themes that telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim can get us to. And that's important to think about as we approach Leil HaSeder. We have two main mitzvahs d'oraisa. We have the nowadays. Unfortunately, we only have two. We look forward. It's still time. It could still be time if Mashiach were to come soon. Par Aduma, because we have more than a week. We could yet have a Karban Pesach. For the last 1900 plus years, we've had only two mitzvahs d'oraisa Leil HaSeder. Matzah and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So matzah is relatively easy to take care of. Baruch Hashem, the shul takes care of it, Rabbi Neuber takes care of it for us, the committee takes care of it for us, the matzahs are delivered, you eat the matzah. CPTS Mitzrayim is what we're here tonight to figure out how to best do, to plan for how we're going to fulfill this this mitzvah of words, of actions, and of thought. The Rambam, as you see in front of you, I know some people enjoy text and some do not. In case you do, on the bottom of the first page, there's a Rambam in large font staring at us. The Rabbi reminds us, what is this mitzvah? The sixth parak of his halachas of Pesach about the mitzvah of matzah. Here, parak Zion, the halacha, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And he describes the mitzvah, before he elaborates, the thumbnail portrait, the abstract of the mitzvah, mitzvah seishal Torah, l'saper benisim in the flows, shina'asu la'avoseinu b'mitzrayim. V'le'a chamisha asa benisim. We have a mitzvah to tell, the mitzvah is to talk about Nisim. That's number one. Just to remember, sometimes we get lost in the course of what should we be spending our time on over the course of Magid. The most important thing, number one, is to tell the stories. Gematrias are good, but the key is telling the stories and sharing around the table the stories of Yetzias Mitzrayim and making sure everyone knows what happened. Chalecha v'echad fi mashahu, to a 5-year-old and a 5-year-old's age appropriate for a 5-year-old, to a 15-year-old, to a 25-year-old, to a 55-year-old, to try to think in as sophisticated way as we can, to review the story. What happened? And with a focus on the Nisim. What were the Nisim HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us? How did he take care of us? And how was it miraculous? So that's number one. The mitzvah is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The mitzvah is to tell the story. We should make sure that the questions and answers that the Rav spoke about that are key. And that's the method through which we unpack Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The focus should be on what was the story? What happened in Mitzrayim? What was Mitzrayim like? What was it like while we were in Mitzrayim? What was it like? How did we leave? And what was it like after us? So to think about the story. And then, as I mentioned before, that step one is telling the story and thinking about the story and unpacking the story again in a way with whatever props and whatever storyline or whatever drama fits the various ages around the table. And then the next level is to take that story and let that story take us somewhere. It's supposed to bring us to we ought to walk out of Leil HaSeder with a better sense of what happened and a better sense of what did that tell us. Did that improve? Did that deepen our gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Did it deepen our faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Did it deepen our sense of conviction that I need to stick to a lifestyle of mitzvahs, whether it's easy or difficult? But I think that's very important as we think about what we're trying to accomplish Leil HaSeder, trying to tell the story, and tell the story in a way that fits the people around the table. And we're trying to also convey the ideas that the story can give us. And in thinking about this, there's a beautiful line from the Kotzker that's, I think, important. As we think about story and ideas and think about different ages around the table, the Shemi Shmuel records this from his grandfather, the Kotzker, in Parshas Vaschanan. Pasuk we say every day in Kriyat Shema. These words should be on your heart. The Kotzker asks a very straightforward question. Al levavecha? Should be on your heart? That seems sort of like at arm's length. Do you want it to be bil vavecha? Sometimes you find psukim talk about v'ticha uvil vavecha, in your heart. Do you want the ideas to be inside? Like they're sitting on top of your heart? That seems very external. So the Kotzker said, you're right, it is. Because sometimes, maybe often, maybe most of the time, we come across ideas, we come across experiences, opportunities for inspiration that we're not yet ready for. And the Kotzker says, that's fine. You came across a powerful idea, I met someone, and I know it should be inspiring me more than it does. The Kotzker said, that's totally normal. Just understand the way to respond is al levavecha. If you're not ready for it yet, leave it on top of your heart. And that way, when the heart is ready to open, the ideas are there and they'll get absorbed right in. So that's something I think important. If we're one of the older people at a Seder, to think about that. To think about what are aspects of a story and what are ideas that the people around the table, adults, children, are ready to hear now. And what are sort of like the seeds that I can plant? That maybe it won't, you know, the 10-year-old will only understand so much, the 5-year-old will only understand so much, the 16-year-old will only understand so much, the 27-year-old may only understand so much. Right? If I'm a grandparent, I'm looking around, you're raising young children, you don't appreciate things the way I imagine a grandparent would, with more perspective that I look forward to having, Mitzvah, Shatov Mitzlachas, the right time. So we all understand that we keep maturing throughout our lives. So that's fine, that's good. And you look around the table and you think about what are ideas that the people are ready to hear now. Also, what are ideas that maybe you'll get a little bit, but it could be al vavecha. And think about this and file it away for the future. So that's, I think, sort of this, the overall perspective, what it is we're trying to accomplish, to tell the story and to think about cultivating the ideas that the story can grow within us and within the people with whom we're privileged to share a Seder. And with that in mind, I'd like to spend the next couple minutes together looking at three different paragraphs, three independent paragraphs in the Haggadah, and let's see what we can draw from each of these. So before we turn the page, just a little bit of perspective, that box on top of the first page, those are the psukim of the Arba Banim. Some of you only see it in the context of the Haggadah. They are psukim in Chumash, and it's worth taking a look. There's some overlap. That's Chacham, Rasha, and the bottom is Tam, Sheinu Dei Lishol. It's actually interesting that there's overlap between the Rasha and Sheinu Dei Lishol. Three out of the four are from Parashas Bo. The Chacham is from Vaeschanim. But there's a lot more to say about that, but a lot more to think about. And that's there, and largely, maybe we'll return to it in a couple of minutes, but that's really there for you to have a chance to look at and to think about the patterns. Okay, so maybe let's start with the opening paragraph. Opening paragraph. So the questions are asked, we begin to give an answer. So the beginning of the answer is, Kinderlach, there was dynamic. Life was rough, we were on a low level in Mitzrayim, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought us out. And we later in the Seder, we're going to talk about that movement spiritually, from Ovdei Avodah Zarah to Keravan HaMakom LaAvodaso. But we begin with Avadam Hayinu L'Parah B'Mitzrayim V'Yotzeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we were physically, politically, we were in slavery, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. We talk about both. The Gemara says, as a discussion, Rav and Shmuel, what's the focus on? And we do both. We look at the physical, the political, and then later on we get to the spiritual journey. From Ovdei Avodah Zarah to Keravan HaMakom LaAvodaso. But let's look a little more carefully at this opening paragraph. So, Avadim Yilu Parah B'Mitzrayim, Ve'yotzei Hashem L'keinu Misham. So, we were Avadim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu freed us. Good. And then we go into this, what would be if, counterfactual history. Let's say HaKadosh Baruch Hu never was taken out of Mitzrayim. That's a strange thing to say. Okay. We want to appreciate, let's appreciate how amazing this was. Imagine what life would have been like with that. So I remember as a little kid being very bothered by this line. And I think it could be that many other people at the table want to, they haven't even gotten started yet. And what's this kid doing asking questions? Like, you'll get your candies for asking questions later on. Let's, let's cover a couple of lines. They're being very bothered by this. Even with Hotei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Zavaseim in Mitzrayim, Anu Vaneinu B'nei Baneinu, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu never took, if we're not for Yitzias Mitzrayim, where would we be? We would still be Mishubadim L'Parah B'Mitzrayim. Really? I remember a little kid wondering, Mitzrayim didn't last forever. Even without Yetzias Mitzrayim, Egypt is not what it once was. We would not have been in the part of the Egyptian Empire. There is no Egyptian Empire to be a part of. What does this mean? Then, I was very literal as a little child. But there are more sophisticated questions to wonder about this also. Well, what do they mean? It was still in Meshubba to Paro? Really? What? We would have passed on. I mean, today it means, okay, so the Egyptian Empire fell, but, someone else took over. So we were Meshubba to someone or other. Rav Chaim Freelander has a fascinating approach to this. And fascinating in terms of a whole new way of reading the sentence, a whole new way of thinking about how important, how sensitive this is. After all, our opening paragraph, we should talk about things that are pretty fundamental. So he suggests that we definitely are. And in doing so, he says, first, Leil HaSeder, we'll answer questions with two other questions. We had one question, we'll answer two other questions. And these are questions that I think you can independently ask around the table. Maybe kids will ask them, or maybe you can ask them. And these are questions maybe that, if you're no longer a kid, you're embarrassed to ask a question, because unfortunately, older sometimes we lose comfort in asking questions. This is a great question. He says, what's going on with the whole negotiation? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, tell Paro, give us 3 days. What's that all about? It's not true. They didn't want 3 days. And Midrashim say later, Rashi quotes, that Paro really thought to the very end. Paro thought it was 3 days. Rashi quotes in Midrash that B'shalach Paro Sa'am, Paro had sent along embedded spies among the Jewish people. After 3 days, they weren't coming back, so they came back to report to Paro that this is a jailbreak. So it sounds like Paro really thought all the way through, even after Malchus Paros, he thought this was a temporary trip. Why? Why not just be up front? Why do we have to sneak it? Then another thing. What's with the Kadosh Baruch Hu promises Avraham Avinu, Bris Ben Absar, Achar Kain, Yetzu, Brichosh Gadol. Okay. So that was definitely Niskayim. There was Niskayim spiritually with the Torah, and Niskayim physically with the funds with which Klal Yisrael walked out of Mitzrayim. How did Klal Yisrael get the gold and silver? Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, would you please ask the Jewish people to what? Borrow. Why borrow? Give it to us. Give it to us. Or Kadosh Baruch Hu could have induced the Mitzrim to come over and offer gift. Well, what's with the borrowing? They weren't borrowing. They had no intent of giving it back. So why the pretense? Why the pretense with Paro? Pretense with the Egyptians? What's it all about? It says Rav Chaim Friedlander in Sifsei Chaim, which is the first three volumes are Machshava essays on throughout the year, throughout the cycle of the year on the Moedim. So near the end of his section, most of the way through his section on Pesach, his comments on the Haggadah. This is his first comment. He says, you know what's going on? He said, we would be Meshubadim LaParo. It doesn't mean we would be enslaved to Paro. It means we would feel a debt of gratitude to Paro. We would think we would owe Paro Yashikalach. And that would create two problems. Number one, if we walked out of Mitzrayim feeling indebted to Mitzrayim, that would have opened the door for an ongoing sense of hashpa from Egyptian culture. Hashpa which would have been very, very negative. It was important that we not feel that we owe Paro anything. It was important that we not feel we owe Mitzrayim anything. And then he says, not only a practical, strategic point, but fundamentally, as we say later in the Seder, one of the main messages of Leil HaSeder, the whole Yetzias Mitzrayim, but particularly Leil HaSeder with Makas Becharos, is to recognize that Einon Milvado, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the sole power in the universe. Any other power, any other force that we encounter only works because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to work. And that's what we mean when we say Hashem Echad, not just that there's one God, the only. He is the sole power in the universe. Everything, everyone and everything operates only at the grace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's Aniv L'Malach, Aniv L'Osaraf. It's rarely obvious, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want, in general, to be obvious in Olam Hazeh. He wants us, he chooses to glove his hands so we can have Nisyonah, so life can progress in a normal-looking way. But one of the few times HaKadosh Baruch Hu totally pulled the curtain away and made it absolutely clear that I run everything, that was Leil Tezva, the original Leil Tezva of Nisan. So says Rav Chaim Friedlander, that notion of Gilui HaYichud, of making it clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in total control, that was the one of the main messages of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We don't want to be Meshubadim L'Paro Mitzrayim. We wouldn't want it to seem as one could walk away thinking, oh, you know, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Paro together. It was HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Mitzrayim together. Paro chose to let us go. That's why I had to be clear to the Jewish people. Paro never chose to let us go. He thought he was letting us go for a couple of days. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one who took us out. The Mitzrayim didn't think that they were actually giving us anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one who sorted with that we would actually walk out B'Rechush Gadol. So those are questions that on their own can work. And in the context of Meshubadim L'Paro Mitzrayim, it becomes very powerful. When we talk about the Arba Banim, I think we sometimes get uncomfortable. You definitely want to, or depending on how, if there are four kids around the table, so yeah, want to make sure you end up with anyone. Any one of the kids deciding that they can peg all the other kids around the table as one of the Arba Banim. I am one of four children, so we were always trying to be sensitive to. Right. Exactly. Let's talk about the Russia. We sometimes get uncomfortable talking about the Russia. Let's talk about the Russia. Ma'avon azos lachem. So he's looking at the Haggadah of the Nesivos. The Nesivos is famous. Yaakov of Lisa is famous for his major league heavy-duty svarim on halacha and yardei, chashamishpat, and gittin, and hilchos pesach. He also has a beautiful, he has all that. He also has beautiful works on Haggadah. One of them is his Ma'as Anisim. His parish on the Haggadah. So he points out that with the Russia, there's a lot going on. Number one, we don't give the answer, Mahu Omer, Mahavo Azos Lachem. Now the Russia says, what's his avoda to you? Now if you turn the page, Vamartem Zevach Pesach Hu Lashem, Asher Pasach Abate B'nei Yisrael B'Mitzrayim. You're supposed to say that this is a Karim Pesach, Kadosh Baruch Hu, that doesn't appear in the Haggadah. Bavur Zeh Asa Hashem Li, B'Seisim Mitzrayim. That's what appears in the Haggadah, but that's a parak later. That's sort of strange. You compare it, the Medrash with the Pasuk. Let's go to, instead of the Lachem V'lo, Lo, Hotzis Atzmo, Kal, Kafir V'Iker, where did that come from? Where did that come from? And then you got to figure out that what it is that we do say. What it is that we do say. Ilu Haya Sham Lo Haya Nigal. Why Ilu Sham, he wouldn't have left. But say Simi Mitzrayim, he wouldn't have left. Why? He wouldn't have been Nigal. And it's not true. The Sirius points out, Dasa and Avir were not fine fellows. Right? And they, not before, not after. And yet they somehow managed to leave. And it's hard to know what we do say doesn't fit, and why did we say? So the Nesiva suggests. He says, number one, in terms of what happened to the answer in Chumash, why didn't we quote that? He says we did, because this is of all the tellings of all the descriptions of Sipri Tzias Yisrayim and Chumash, this is the one time where we don't respond to the child. Ki yomer aleichem b'neichem ma vozos lachem. There's no v'amartem lo. Usually it's v'amarte elav, speaking to him. He says v'amartem. We're not responding to him. Instead, what we do is we respond to ourselves. And he suggests that that's why we don't... He thinks lachem v'lo lo. He says the response is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it for me. He thinks that the Nesiva says, number one, if you don't believe, so we're not going to respond. If you're asking out of anger, so it's not going to be helpful. As the Mishnah says in other contexts also, person in the grip of powerful emotion, that's not the time for rational conversation. So if you're asking out of anger, we're not going to engage you in a discussion of Amunah. Maybe we'll try to ledaber libcha, try to calm you down, speak to the emotions. We're not going to engage in discussion of ideas if you're just speaking out of anger. But what we will do is discuss ideas with ourselves. Because the Nesiva says, you have to realize, if you encounter something that shakes your Amunah, one needs to mechazik one's own Amunah. Reshechter mentioned more than once that when he was in college and I think when he was in grad school, both, he had a professor in each who would often share ideas, absolute kfira in class. So he said that he would, after class, he would go to the basement of one of the dormitories and sit down and say for Atanya. After you have an encounter with something that shakes your emunah, you have to actively reinforce it. So if I've had an encounter with a difficult conversation, in terms of the way I interact with that person, it's going to be ledaber libo. It's not going to be a discussion of ideas. But then I have to turn around afterwards and ask myself, I have to turn around afterwards and ask myself, how am I going to mechazik my own emunah? Time is short. There's more to say about the Rasha, but let me close with a brief discussion of Yochum Rosh Chodesh, which is the last piece of instructions before we really jump into the Arami Ovidavi. So it's a strange question that the Medrash asks. Now, the Rav gave a fantastic answer just now. Let me present the answer of the Nesivas as well. Yochum Rosh Chodesh, why do you think you should start from Rosh Chodesh? So Rav Neuberger just said, maybe Yochum Rosh Chodesh because it's Rosh Chodesh of a year later. Rosh Chodesh of 2449 was when the process of Gula was completed, because that's when there was Hashras Hashkin in the Mishkan. But then we go on, the next Havamina is maybe the daytime of Erev Pesach. Why would you think it's starting with the daytime? So Nesiva seems to suggest that maybe they go hand in hand. We're looking at the different mitzvahs. One might have thought that everyone agrees, some hold that you begin to learn the halachas of Pesach 30 days in advance, and others say from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So I would say, instead of Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you learn the halachas of Pesach, maybe that's when you can tell the story of Pesach as well. Yochum Rosh Chodesh. If not that, maybe Karban Pesach. We unfortunately don't experience this, but the days of Beis HaMikdash, the Meher Yavo, so the afternoon of Erev Pesach is the time of the bringing of the Karban Pesach. So the answer is, Asti B'Shosh Sheish Matzah Umaro Munachav Manecha, that the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzhi, this conversation doesn't take place in conjunction with Talmud Torah, about Hilchos Pesach. It doesn't take place in conjunction with Karban Pesach. takes place specifically about the matzah. And maybe something to think around the table is what's special about matzah is, there could be different ways to present this for different ages. If you look throughout Maggid, matzah gets two different angles. We start by talking about Lach Ma'anya. It's a symbol of Golos. This is what the Jews ate when they were in Mitzrayim. But then, at the end of Maggid, Matzah Zusha Anu Ochlin, Ram Galmiel, he has an incredibly positive spin on matzah. Matzah reminds us about how HaKadosh Baruch took us out of Mitzrayim. At the beginning, we're talking about matzah is a symbol of Golos. Matzah goes with Mar. At the end, we're talking about matzah speaks to the precision. Not only did HaKadosh Baruch take us out, but exactly at the moment, exactly the way he wanted to take us out. So that teaches a lot of things. Mitzidenu, it teaches us that the items that we experience in our lives can be good or bad. And often depends on how we take them. The same matzah. Mitzad HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminds us that the same item in our lives, that the same matzah that may look like a Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying us difficulty, over time we may look back and recognize that it was a great gift. And that takes us to that ultimately is one of the great messages, coming back to where we started, one of the great messages, one of the great fundamental ideas of the Seder is again to recognize that Kadosh Baruch Hu runs our lives whether we recognize it or not, even in obvious ways. And that I leave you with a little something that you some enjoy using as an introduction to V'hisha Amda. It is one of the stories of Hashgacha Pratis. This comes from the Maramakim is on the bottom of the page if you want to take a look. Harper is 1899. Mark Twain, you may have come across as reprinted in various places. You can find online the original. It's really there. Mark Twain was not an incredible philo-Semite. He was not necessarily the greatest lover of Jews. But he ends his essay concerning the Jews with this remarkable recognition that the Jews seem to have broken all the rules, all the patterns of history. And that's arguably, as Yaakov Emden said, the greatest demonstration that Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world is the last 3,500 years of Jewish history. That is the story of the Seder, and that is part of what we try to do as we build Emunah around the table.
Okay, Bishus Rabbi Neuberger and Rabbi Cohn. Thank you to everyone for coming tonight. What's so nice about learning together in this way is that we get to hear so many different perspectives on the Haggadah. And there are so many different perspectives on the Haggadah. There was a Jew in the 1960s who wrote a volume called The Bibliography of the Haggadah Shel Pesach. And in that volume in 1960, already listed 2,717 editions of the Haggadah. That was in the 1960s. So by now, for sure, there's must be in more than 3,500 editions of the Haggadah. The first actually printed Haggadah was in 1482 in Guadalajara, Mexico. There's only one copy that's left in Yerushalayim of that original first printed Haggadah. But as you can see, that it's something that Klal Yisrael has loved throughout the ages. It's something that has so many different angles, so many different perspectives, so much to talk about, and we have about 20 minutes, so we'll make the most of it. Just a story to highlight the different perspectives. There was a Hasidish Rebbe who went with his Hasidim to a matzah factory to bake. And they're busy and they're baking the matzahs, and there happens to be a simple there at the same time as well. And he sees the Rebbe, and he sees his entourage, and he sees them baking, and he sees how special it must be. And he goes over into a corner and he starts to daven to Hashem. He says, Ribbono Shalom, if only I could have the matzahs of the Rebbe. I have such plain, simple matzahs. The Rebbe has all sorts of kavanas. He's got so many people helping him. And he cries out, Master of the Universe, if only I could have the Rebbe's matzahs. And the Rebbe overheard this Jew's plea. And the Rebbe was so nispoil from the sincerity of this Jew, he said to the Hasidim, go bring him some of our matzahs and let's trade with him. The fervor and the passion that he put into that plea for the matzahs, those make those matzahs more special. It's a classic Hasidic tale. They told the story to the Brisker Rav, and the Brisker Rav said, that's not the pshat in the story. The Brisker Rav says, you know what I see in that story? He says, the Pasha pshat, the way the Hasidim tell it, is that the Rebbe saw the fervor of this Yid, and he saw his wholesome simplicity, and he said, I want the simple Yid's matzahs. The Brisker Rav said, I see the story differently. He said, I see in that story that tefillah works. Now, why would the Rebbe want to trade away his good matzahs with some Pasha Yid? The Brisker Rav said, you see a halachic concept that tefillah actually, it's poel, it works. Right? So Rabbi Saul Reisman used to tell this story to highlight how two people can look at the exact same story and see so many different perspectives. As our Chasher Rabbanim highlighted tonight, to tell the story is what we're trying to do. Each person in his own way, as the Rambam writes, when he describes the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, in accordance with the ability to express it, in accordance with the ability those who are listening to understand it. There's certainly much to think about, and each person should develop their own approach and take from what attracts them about the Haggadah Shel Pesach. I want to begin with a general comment, and that is, if we just stop and think about it, it's so remarkable, it's so impossible, it's so unrealistic that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim. We mamish had nothing. We highlighted in the Haggadah. We quote the pasuk from the Navi that we were naked and bare, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw us, misposesses b'damayich. We try to find a little schus here and there. Dam Pesach, Dam Mila, Loshinu Es Shemam, they kept their clothing, they weren't nichshel and arayos, whatever it is, we're trying to gather a little bit of schus for Klal Yisrael. But at the end of the day, if we try to imagine that we got out in our schus, in a certain sense, we're lying to ourselves and we're missing the point. The Chazon Ish wrote in a letter, in the first volume of the Igros Chazon Ish, he writes that someone wrote to him and said that it must be that Klal Yisrael were on a lofty level. Be'amunah, be'mitzvos, be'torah, be'chasidus. And he brings a medrash, that b'schus nashim tzirkanios, in the merit of the righteous women, we left Mitzrayim. Righteous women, okay, there were righteous women in Mitzrayim. And then he goes to another medrash, right, that the Iker Shibud of Klal Yisrael was only 86 years of the 210. So how bad could they have been in 86 years? And the Chazon Ish responds to the one who wrote him this letter, Kol hadvarim halalu ein behem mamash. If you're trying to make a case for Klal Yisrael, you're making a mistake. Shem kulam neged divrei rabbeinu zal. It's entirely sages. Let's not pretend at the Seder, or reflecting historically on what happened, that we were worthy of being taken out of Mitzrayim. And the Chazon Ish says, I'll tell you a medrash that makes it abundantly clear. The medrash in Shemos, at the end of the first parsha, that's how the Midrashim are broken into parshios, Lo hayu Yisrael ru'uyin li'natzal. That Klal Yisrael did not deserve to be saved. And it was only because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unbelievable rachmanis for Klal Yisrael that we in fact got out of Mitzrayim. We forget sometimes, right? Pesach Chon likes to emphasize this, I've heard him say on numerous occasions, that the very word Pesach, if you look in Shemos, if you look in Shemos Perek Yud Beis, the word Pesach does not only mean, as we're known to interpret it as Hashem was Pesach ala Pesach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu passed over, HaKadosh Baruch Hu skipped over our homes, sparing our lives, but the very word Pesach, Rashi writes Chamal, a lashon of Rachmanis, a lashon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu having Rachmanis on Klal Yisrael, not because we had any zechuyos. And the Chazon Ish says, let's not come to the night making it ki'ilu we're worthy. Let's realize what an unbelievable Rachmanis HaKadosh Baruch Hu had upon Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, in his Haggadah Shel Pesach on page 8, he points out that the word rachamim is actually interesting related to the Hebrew word rechem, which means a womb. Because someone, a child who comes from a mother's womb, the love that a mother has for a child is so beyond, is so willing to go above and beyond to do anything for a child. And therefore, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu showers his rachmanis upon us, it's literally a Kadosh Baruch Hu recognizing, as much as officially it looked like Klal Yisrael were being born out of Mitzrayim, as the pasuk highlights, goy mikarev goy, Kadosh Baruch Hu had to extract us from that place, from the Kor HaBarzel. But at the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is truly the one who created us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is responsible for us. And when you come from someone, that rechem, from that place of birth, then that person has rachmanis on that person. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had tremendous, tremendous rachmanis on Klal Yisrael. Again, we could try to learn a lesson from maybe the small zechuyos that we did have. We could highlight the significance of the... Maybe we learn on the Seder night the power of a small thing. We didn't have a lot. Maybe that little bit of schus actually goes a long way. That's certainly a theme that we think about on Pesach. When the Radbaz, in his famous tshuva, is trying to figure out why are we so stringent about chametz? How could it be you could have a pot of chicken soup the size of this entire Beis Knesses, and a single crumb of chametz falls into such a thing, and it's not batel. Not batel in shishim, not batel in meya, not batel in 200, not batel in a million. And he says, I can't work it out in halacha. Rabbi David ben Zimmer, the Radbaz, says, I simply cannot figure out, from a strictly halachic perspective, I simply cannot figure out why we're so stringent about chametz. And therefore the Radbaz says it must be, in almost very literal sense, we have to take the words of our sages very seriously, when they compare the Yetzer Hara to chametz. And just like the Yetzer Hara, every bit of Yetzer Hara is exceedingly dangerous, so every bit of chametz becomes exceedingly dangerous. So many svarim point to that tshuva from the Radbaz and flip it the other direction. Such a tiny crumb of chametz can be so destructive, but we know from Chazal, Mida Tova Merupa. That means a tiny bit of goodness can actually accomplish so much. So yes, maybe we need to look for those little zechuyos that Klal Yisrael had, the little bit of merit that maybe we had in Mitzrayim, to try to identify that small bit of worthiness that we had. But at the end of the day, the Chazon Ish says, that's not really how we come to the Seder night. We come with tremendous humility and tremendous bittul to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we remind ourselves that we were totally unworthy. It doesn't make sense to us. The 49th level of Tumah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the impossible for us. And we draw tremendous, tremendous strength from knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was willing to do such a thing for us. Rabbi Ganak Shlita in his Sefer on Chumash, the Birchas Yitzchak. So he brings a very interesting comment in Parshas Kisetze. He says, at the end of Shoftim, I apologize. At the end of Shoftim, the Pasuk says, Kisetze lemelchama alevecha, v'ra'is asu, sorry, there's two Kisetzes. You have to be careful when you lay in Shabbos Mincha. End up reading the Kisetze at the end of, so Kisetze lemelchama alevecha, and the Parsha Shoftim, when you go out to battle against your enemy, and you see horse, and you see chariot, and you see am rav mimcha, lo tira mehem, do not be afraid, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with you. Which HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The HaKadosh Baruch Hu who was Hama'alcha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. You go out to battle at any point in Jewish history and you say, just remember Mitzrayim. Ask Rabbi Ganak, Tzarech Biur, Lama Hizkir HaKosav Kanes Inyan Hama'alcha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Why do I reflect? I'm going out to battle an enemy in the 1900s. So why am I reflecting that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim? So Rabbi Ganak says so beautifully, he says, because sometimes the Jewish people go out to battle. And it seems like a statistical impossibility that there's any chance we're going to survive. So we go back to Mitzrayim, we close our eyes, and we reflect back on Mitzrayim, when it also didn't make sense that we should get out of that place, that we should somehow be victorious over an enemy who was so much more powerful than us, a Klal Yisrael who are unidentifiably better than our enemies, Halalu of the Avodah Zarah, v'halalu of the Avodah Zarah, as Chazal say. There's a taina against the Jewish people, we're not any different than them, and yet a Kadosh Baruch Hu is somehow able to identify something unique and special about Klal Yisrael, and to take us out from that place. And therefore, whenever a Jew finds himself in trouble, says Rabbi Ganak, we think back to Mitzrayim. I find myself, whatever situation, whether it's a physical battle or a spiritual battle, I reflect back on Yisias Mitzrayim, the impossibility of the salvation that took place then, and I make it a reality. I dive into Hashem, and I ask for that Rachmanis, what the very word Pesach means, that Hashem should help us once again. I want to share, for the few minutes that we have left, a few insights into the Maggid section of the Haggadah. First, a very important question that the Rishonim grappled with, and that is, why don't we make a bracha on the section of the Haggadah called Maggid? Why is there no bracha that leads us into the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? Is it a mitzvah? Is it one of the 613? No question it is. The Rambam counts it, the Sefer Achinuch, Mitzvah Chaf Aleph. There's no question it's a mitzvah. So why do we not bracha? Do I make a bracha before I eat the matzah? Yes. Do I make a bracha before I take a lulav? Yes. Do I make a bracha before I blow a shofar? Yes. There are banans, maror? Yes. Chanukah, Megillah, we always make a bracha. We always recite a bracha before performing a mitzvah. So the Rishonim grappled with the question, why is there no bracha to lead us into Maggid? And essentially they're divided into two camps. Those who say that there is a bracha, you just need to know how to find it. And those who say that there really shouldn't be a bracha. Those who say that there is a bracha and you just need to know how to find it, very interesting answers that we find. The Me'iri, in Maseches Brachos and Daf Yud Beis, the Me'iri says that the bracha... Interestingly enough, the bracha on Maggid was actually the brachos of Kriya Shema that we said at Maariv. Now go figure that one out, exactly how that works. That when we dive in the Maariv, and we said Ga'al Yisrael, we're already thinking that that's the bracha going on the Maggid. There's a lot of questions we could certainly ask on that. The Me'iri actually brings, he's the only Rishon that I know, who brings the opinion that Yesh Omrim, that we actually do make a regular bracha on Maggid. Certainly none of us have ever had that experience. We don't make a bracha Asheri Kiddushanu B'mitzvosav Yitzivanu as we introduce Sipur Yesias Mitzrayim. Miri says, Yesh Omrim, that there was such an opinion. He thinks that there is a bracha, but not a bracha right before the mitzvah, a bracha that we made during Ma'ariv. Could be. Others say that the bracha, the Shibohi Aleket brings an opinion, that maybe the bracha on Maggid is after Maggid. We certainly know that Maggid ends with a long bracha, describing the salvation of old and the hope for the future, which of course the question, why would I make a bracha after I do the mitzvah? Every time we do a mitzvah, we make a bracha over Las Yasam. Chazal said we always make the bracha before the performance of the mitzvah. Why here am I making the bracha after the mitzvah? Shall share with you an amazing insight from the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer, in the second volume of his drashos, says, where do we find that someone makes a bracha after the performance of a mitzvah? There is one example that sticks out in our mind. And that is a convert. A convert who's undergoing the process of becoming a Jew first goes to the mikvah, and after emerging from the mikvah, is then able to make a bracha on his conversion, on the tefillah in the mikvah. Why can't the convert make the bracha before tefillah in the mikvah? Very simply, he's not a Jew. So it says the Chassam Sofer so beautifully, Mitzchila ovdi avodah zarah hayu avosenu. The transformation of the Seder night, we begin the Seder literally starting off as people are not yet a Kodesh Baruch Hu's people. And therefore we're not able to make the bracha. After we've gone through Maggid, Maschil b'genosu, Messiah b'shvach, once we've transformed ourselves, then we've emerged, so to speak, from that mikvah called Maggid, and then the Jewish people can make the bracha. It's a beautiful explanation of the Sam Sofer, and it sheds a lot of light on the Shibboleth Aleket's opinion that the bracha at the end of Magid is the bracha on Magid. Other Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yerucham, says that maybe the Kiddush that we make, Kaddish, maybe that's the bracha on Magid. Okay, interesting. Different approaches. Where is the bracha of Magid hiding? The Rashba is quoted by the Abu Draham as saying you don't make a bracha on Magid. Why don't you make a bracha on Magid? You don't make a bracha on Magid. The mitzvah of Sipur Yisias Mitzrayim is a mitzvah she'ein la kitzvah. It's a mitzvah that has no defined properties. It has no really beginning or end. The smallest amount is enough to fill the mitzvah, and it's really an endless mitzvah. You could sit all night in B'nai Brak and talk about the story of Yisias Mitzrayim. So because it's a mitzvah that doesn't have a clear parameters, so the Rashba feels that one does not make a bracha on the Magid. It's an interesting thing to think about. I'll just mention very quickly. I saw in the volume Yareach LeMo'adim from Rav Yerucham Olshin, one of the Rashi Yeshiva in Lakewood. So in his Sefer on Pesach, in Simen Yud Zayin, he says, the truth is there may be two aspects to Magid. There may be an aspect of Magid that is limited, and there may be an aspect of Magid that is endless. There is a text of the Haggadah. And there were many tzaddikim who had a lot of insights to share during the Haggadah, but they wouldn't say a word. They would just read the Haggadah straight through. They would save the Divrei Torah for maybe during the meal. So there might be some aspect of a Kriyas HaHaggadah. To read the Haggadah, the Minchas Chinuch even wonders, do I have to say the Haggadah in Hebrew? What's the Hava mean? I just say it in any language. Why would I have to say the Haggadah in Hebrew? It's not like Kriya Shema. There's no Chiyav of Kriya, but maybe there is a Chiyav of Kriya. Maybe there's an obligation to read the Haggadah, and that is a definable text, and yet maybe there's also an aspect of Sipur Yasias Mitzrayim, like the Rashba said, that is completely endless. And I think, while there's a lot to discuss there in terms of the lumdis behind it, I think as an approach to the Haggadah, I think it's a valuable lesson. On the one hand, we have to ensure that the Haggadah has a definable starting point, middle point, ending point, to make sure we don't schlep it out too much. But there should also be an expression as we say the Haggadah, as we say that defined text, to feel that there's an endless amount of expression that I'm trying to find within these words. An insight from Magid. Mitzchila ovde avorezara hayu avosein. I saw something this year in the Kol Menachem Haggadah from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, which I think is such an important yisod in Avodas Hashem. The Lubavitcher Rebbe says, "Mitchila of the Avodah Zara Hayu Avosenu." Who's Avosenu? I said, I don't know. Terach, the father of Avram. Well, Terach's not one of the Avos. Last time I checked, "Mitchila of the Avodah Zara Hayu Avosenu." Look in the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zara in the first parak. It's explicit that Avram Avinu as a child was an idol worshiper, and a child may not be until he was only 3. Some opinions say he didn't become firm until he was 50, which means he went to college, he went to graduate school. And he was hanging out in the Vodazara circles for the first 50 years of his life. Mitzchila ovdei avodah zara hayu avoseinu. And yet, says Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Zohar very famously comments, the Zohar says, Va'avraham zokein ba bayamim, Avram became old with all of his days, says the Zohar, ba bayamim, all of his days were accounted for. So says Lubavitcher Rebbe, come on. How could it be that a person in his younger years worships the Vodazara, zara, and yet he gets to the Olam Ha'emes and the Kodesh Baruch says, oh, ba bayamim, all of your days are accounted for. You did everything perfect. There's always making Avram out to be perfect. So which is it? Is it possible that a person who worships the Avodah Zarah in his younger years is in fact perfect? Mitchila over the Avodah Zarah, hayu avoseinu? Such an important lesson. Lubavitcher Rebbe says, yes, it is possible for a person who was an idol worshiper in his younger years to get a score of 100 in the Olam Amis. And Lubavitcher Rebbe says, I'll bring you a proof in Halacha. I'll bring you a proof in something that has to be obvious to us. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Klal Yisrael to wear tefillin, the first time Hashem said, Jewish people, there's a mitzvah to wear tefillin. So says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, where exactly did the Jews go the next morning to buy a million pairs of tefillin? What Judaica store did they go to buy tefillin? So it must be that there was a time lapse between the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mitzvah, the mitzvah of tefillin, and when Klai Yisrael were actually able to fulfill that mitzvah of tefillin. And Lubavitcher Rebbe explains, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands that just because this is part of an ideal in Hashem's world, doesn't mean that you're ready to do it that second. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees our life in context. Which means HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that if you're born into a home of idol worshippers and a society of idol worshippers, and you worship the little Avodah Zarah when you were younger, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that's okay, I understand. How could I have expected different from you? To paraphrase the Gemara in Brachos Daf Lamed Beis, Mayasa ben shel yechta. What choice did Avraham Avinu have as a child? And therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avraham Avinu, if you keep growing, if you keep moving past it, if you get there, Hashem says, I have a timeline for you. If you are able to get some point in the future, even if originally you were an idol worshipper, Hashem says, I give you 100 on the Bechina. Because unlike us, our human eyes, the flesh and blood, where we're so quick to judge, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I see your life in context. I don't expect you to get there before it's reasonable for you to get there. Chai Yisrael, there's a mitzvah of tefillin, but I can't expect you to wear tefillin until it becomes realistic for you to wear tefillin. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't expect Avraham Avinu to become a founding father of Klal Yisrael until it became realistic for him to open his eyes and see the world and see Hashem in that way. And it's a very important insight for the growth of a person to not feel stifled, perhaps by sinful decisions or poor decisions that one made in the past. V'hisha Amda, quick insight into V'hisha Amda. The Maharsham was one of the Gedolei HaPoskim, passed away in the early 1900s, 1911. One of the Gedolei HaPoskim in Ukraine, author of the Sefer Das Torah, many Shailos and Chuvos, Maharsham. The Maharsham writes a very interesting thing about V'hisha Amda. V'hisha Amda, what stood by us? Well, V'hisha Amda Lavo Seinu V'lanu. Something protected us. What's the V'hi? What's the V'hisha Amda? So he says, the V'hisha Amda is the thing that you're holding in your hand. What are you holding in your hand? A cup of wine. If there's one area of halacha, if there's one item in this world, right, that every Jew knows has to separate us in a certain sense from the rest of the world, it's wine. That wine that's handled by a Gentile is no longer fit to be used. V'hisha Amda. When you hold that cup of wine in your hand, you reflect on the separation that's necessary. A Jew's wine and a Gentile. Right? V'hisha Amda. It's that separation which has protected us throughout the ages, says the Maharsham. It's the Jewish people's understanding that we're categorically different. And while we don't, God forbid, hate the world or reject the world, but we're cautious of the world. We remind ourselves on the Seder night, who are our heroes? Right? Who's our world? I speak about this a lot to my Talmidim these days. Now think about the players on our team. LeBron James is not on our team. He's a good basketball player, but he's not on our team. A poster of LeBron James in my family's hanging a poster on the wall of one of my children, it doesn't make sense. That's not a player on our team. He's a great basketball player, and if you like basketball, you can cheer him on. So is Steph Curry. A lot of great basketball players. But that's not our team. V'hisha Amda, Klal Yisrael recognize that there's something that holds us apart. And we take tremendous pride in that. And I often say to my students, if I meet a student who's struggling with Emunah, I say, forget about trying to prove whether or not Hashem exists. Forget about trying to prove whether or not Torah is given at Har Sinai. We could talk about all those things. I said, just think about the players on our team. Who are the players on our team? Avraham Avinu. Think about the Vilna Gaon. Think about the Chafetz Chaim. Think about the Baal Shem Tov. Think about the player. Think about the Moshe Rabbeinu and the Aaron HaKohen. Each one of these people is a whole universe. We've got the greatest team of all time. And we should take tremendous pride in that. And not feel, again, that it's wrong to want to separate from the world, but in a proper way, V'hisha Amda, it's that separation, it's that cup of wine that we hold in our hand that has protected us throughout all of the generations. Maybe we have time for one final insight. Dayenu. Let's talk about Dayenu just for a moment. The Rav mentioned earlier the importance of recognizing how a Jew has a sense of avdus upon leaving Mitzrayim. A sense of responsibility to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the truth is, the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah and Daf Yudalid, we went from being Avdei Paro to being Avdei Hashem. Hallelu Avdei Hashem, like we say in Tilim Kufir Gimel. Hallelu, sing praise Avdei Hashem, velo Avdei Paro. We became Avdei Hashem. People mistakenly think that Pesach granted us freedom. Freedom doesn't mean to do whatever you want. Right? The freedom that we were granted, as Rabbi Sachs explains in his Haggadah so beautifully, is not the freedom to do what you want, but the freedom to do what you ought, to do what you're supposed to do. And for a Jew, what a Jew is supposed to do is to be an Eved Hashem. It's a gevaldic praise for a Jew to be called Moshe Rabbeinu in his dying moments, Vayamas Moshe, Eved Hashem. The last word of the Navi Malachi, Zichru Toras Moshe, Avdi. Remember the Madrega Yismach Moshe B'mat Naschalko, Ki Eved Ne'aman Karasalo. What a pride it is to be an Eved. And an Eved means, as was explained earlier, that a person feels a sense of being indebted not to a paro, like Rabbi Cohen explained from Rabbi Friedlander, but to be indebted to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. An Eved feels, right, that my life is dependent upon my master, and I have nothing of my own. I want to end with an insight from Rav Schwab in his Sefer on Tefillah, in the Iyun Tefillah. Rav Schwab in the Iyun Tefillah on page 300. Rabbi Schwab wonders, in Parshas Vayigash, why do I need to know the economic history of Mitzrayim? They were struggling, they were hungry, so what did they do? They spent all their money, gave their money to Yosef to get food. And when they ran out of money, they gave their land and their animals. And when they ran out of their land and their animals, they gave themselves. They became indentured servants to Yosef and to the state. Why do I need to know how each person in Mitzrayim acquired food from Yosef? Says Rav Schwab so beautifully. Rav Schwab says, "Kishein efsharus l'shalem ba'ara tova shemekablu." What it's teaching us is when it's not possible for a person to financially, when you're out of money, when you've given as much as you can in order to say thank you, and it's still not enough, you still feel indebted to someone else, and you've given over presents and gifts. What's the ultimate thing you can give them? Give them yourself. Mosrim es haguf v'chol ametzios lios eved lenosin. You become what? A slave, a servant, someone who gives over his body, his very life, to the one who you feel indebted to. What words is the Schwab commenting on in the Siddur? You'll think about it when you daven Shmoneh Esrei now. V'koneh hakol. Kadosh Baruch Hu owns everything. Why? Because we owe him so much. We owe him so much that it's not possible for us to pay. As we say in the Nishmas, the Schwab quotes, Ilu pinu male shira kayam. If our lips were filled with endless praise for Hashem, we still couldn't say thank you. He says for the kalach ha-ri'iyah, the kalach ha-shmiyah, to be able to hear, to be able to see, to be able to speak, to be able to move. Rav Schwab says, to be able to ingest food. We're so endlessly indebted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Konei HaKol. He has to acquire everything. The only thing we can give HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says Rav Schwab, when all has been given to Hashem, there's nothing left to give, is to give ourselves as avadim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think that's part of the reflection that we have when we come to Dayenu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you would have given us this, that already would have been more than our whole existence. We'd owe you everything. And Allah has kam v'kama that you gave us this and you gave us that. It's such a night to say thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like we started with from the Chazon Ish, that again we feel totally indebted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We had no zchus to really get out of Mitzrayim. But as an Eved, as a thankful and humbled Eved before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, eating the humbling food of matzah, on a very simplistic, in a simplistic sense, to be able to give ourselves over wholeheartedly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as an expression of our thanks. And each person in their own way, as the Kaf HaChaim points out, should try to inject some of his own feelings throughout the Seder, ki'ilu hu yatsa mitzrayim, and certainly in the Dayenu to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you would have just given me a roof over my head, Dayenu, if you would have given me a spouse, a child, Baruch Hashem, you gave me more than one child, Dayenu, 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 there's an endless amount of thanks we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it should help us to become better Avdei Hashem, and live up to that tremendous title that again Moshe was proud of at the end of his life. Yismach Moshe v'man eschalko, ki evan ne'aman karasala. Freilich in chayakash v'samech.
Sammy's. Sammy. Sure?